I'd like to begin by sharing one or two verses from a poet saint who many of you are familiar with, Jalaluddin Rumi, of the Sufi tradition. He says, "Your love has filled me with a madness that no one could know, and your gaze has enchanted my heart with a poem that no one could ever write." Later, he shares with us, "Where there are questions, answers will be given. Where there are ships, water will flow. Spend less time seeking water and acquire thirst. Then water shall gush from above and below." It's a very powerful statement there. I think many of us get caught up in seeking the water, and we haven't acquired enough thirst yet. This inner journey of healing, of love and inner light, is basically the same. The light and love, those two things, those two manifestations, are the same phenomenon, the same power that is connected with Source. And what I would like to try to do is try to show some commonalities that Madame Helena Petrovna Blavatsky and Sant Kirpal Singh of the Sant Mat tradition had, where they bridged together. And not focus on differences so much. Of course, they were both great mystics, developed souls within. And the question arises, how were they able to do that? It just doesn't happen overnight. We just don't wake up one day and we're spiritually advanced and enlightened. There's work involved in it. One of the things we have to do is create a ruling passion. And therefore, there's this love that I just spoke of, that when you heard the words of Rumi, you could hear that he had developed that. And he did it with the help of his teacher. Most of the developed and high souls that I'm familiar with, they developed through the help of having a teacher. There's the chela, the student, or the disciple, and then there's the teacher. And humans have to learn from other humans. It's not through a dolphin or a shark or an elephant that we're going to get this spiritual enlightenment. God works through and in all of us. That power just happens to work in some people more than others. And that is not necessarily a bad or good thing. It's just the way it is. And if that wasn't the case, then there would never be a need for Buddha or Christ to have ever appeared. There wouldn't be a need for Lord Krishna to have ever walked the earth. There wouldn't be a need for Lord Kabir or Guru Nanak to be here. So these were people that were beyond connected. They had actually merged their drop of individual consciousness with the ocean of all love and consciousness. And once we become one with something, we're totally connected, and it allows that power and that energy to flow and work through us as individual human beings. Now, to understand this journey, we must first understand that it is not a physical journey. We do get this confused with physics. There is metaphysics and then there's physics. They're two separate entities altogether. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, this is a path or a journey of love, for one thing. It's not tangible, but it does manifest itself both for human observation and spiritual experience. Now, if I ask you, how does love show up for you in your life, what would you tell me? How does the power of God manifest itself for human observation?
Nature.
Anybody else? It indeed is a energy, and it's a force, and it manifests itself for human observation. There's two primal manifestations. One is sound, and one is light. And immediately on the earth realm, I think of a thunderstorm. And they're not all bad, and they don't all destroy things. In fact, some of us will sit out and on a beautiful evening when one comes, and we're enticed, we're enthralled to watch this phenomenon occur. But one thing we noticed on the physical realm is that we have the lightning first, and it's followed by thunder. So on the earth realm, we have light, which we know travels much faster than sound, but it's followed by the sound. And when we were all in school, they said if you count five, then you know that the storm is the difference between the lightning and the thunder. It's a mile away. So if you count it to 20, it's 4 miles away. But on the inner realms, it's the opposite. On the inner realms, the sound comes first, which is not going to make sense to the mind, and then it's followed by the light. Okay? So that's something that we might want to entertain a little bit later when we get to some Q&A. But I'm trying to set up about this inner journey. Now, this light and sound phenomenon, many of you hear the sound, and you usually hear it when it's very quiet and when it's very still and the kids are not around and it may be late at night. And today's doctors have told many of us that we have tinnitus. When you're actually hearing the nam or the shabd or the word, or the Sufis call it bangi asmani, or the ancient Greeks called it logos, early Christians call it the word. You can go all around the world in every group, in every religion, they may all have a different word, but they're all talking about the same phenomenon. There is a vibration, a ringing sound or tone. Some people hear a seashell, and this is why we're so fascinated when we go down to the beach and we pick that seashell up, and everybody has this inclination to pick it up and put it up here and listen to that sound. So I can tell by some of the faces that you know exactly what I'm talking about. Children especially hear it. And as we get older, we tend to lose this ability to hear this sound that is not a physical sound. You cannot measure it. There are no instruments. No matter how advanced and how technical we become, we will never be able to measure the phenomenal sound current, or the om, or the om, A-U-M for some people. So indeed, it is a vibration that's ringing throughout the entire universes. We all know of the physical universe because we have physical bodies, but there is an emotional or a desire, what in the East they call the astral universe. There is a causal universe, and our universe is beyond that. So the point is that this phenomenon of the logos, that Madame Blavatsky, which I'll be referring to her as Madame Blavatsky for the rest of the evening, that's my affectionate name for her, she was aware of this. And this is partially due to her meditation, and she was obviously developed enough to ascend into these higher regions, or she wouldn't have written and talked about them in the fashion that she did. So the point is that anybody in this room can do it, because we all have the innate and inherent ability within us. We are all souls in physical bodies. We're not just the bodies trying to become spiritual. And so this is a beautiful thing. If you have experienced it, you're hearing it on the lower strands, on the higher spiritual realms. This is an incredible phenomenon beyond words, to bask in this radiance of light and sound. How many of you remember Cecil B. DeMille's Moses? Everybody in here is old enough to remember that. Now, how did God appear or manifest to him? Does everybody remember the flaming sound or the sounding flame? Okay, it even manifested in a burning bush that did not burn anyone because that was not physical. Okay, so that is a good pictorial in your mind to be able to see in your mind what I'm talking about. There was the phenomenon of light and sound, and then it became audible as God's voice to Moses. Okay, so this is open and available for anyone that wishes the experience. Now, we live on one of three realms that polarity takes place, or duality, or yin and yang. Here we have male and female. On the astral world, we have male and female, and yin and yang, and then so forth. On the causal realms, the same thing exists. But once you get beyond that, the soul has no gender. And it is amazing to me how we get caught up in this thing of gender when in actuality, the soul is genderless. So that in itself is a beautiful thing. So that would say that source has no gender either. So we get caught up in the father and mother thought and idea of God when God simply just is. And that's a beautiful thing to know as well. So let me clarify a little bit on this light and sound. This is exciting to me, even though I've been aware of this since I was 14 years old. And I'll shortly be 60. And by the way, I can see some of you looking. That means I've been meditating for about 45 years. Most of that time has been at least 2 hours a day of my life. So they just came out and said, well, you know, meditation can halt the aging process. And then they just came out and said it can reverse it. Wow, Benjamin Button. Yes. So I'm still playing basketball on the court with the guys, and it's fun. Nobody knows how old I am. And up till I was 52, I could still dunk a basketball. So people are going to live longer. You're seeing more people live past 115, 120. The Guinness Book of Records will not put you in there unless you have a birth certificate. It's an African-American woman up in Ohio, 121. She doesn't have a birth certificate. There are people over in a place called Georgia in Russia where the women commonly live to be 130. I've talked to people here in Chicago sitting on a bench one day, and I had to ask this guy how old he was, and he said, son, I'm 140. So it's not impossible, because in the age of Genesis, which was the Bronze Age, where we lived to be commonly 1,000 years old, Adam was 930, Seth was 912, Methuselah was 969. And 21 generations later, gentleman by the name of Isaac only lived to be 185. And Abraham was 175, and his wife Sarah was 127. Now it's starting to sound like about where we are. So we've been hanging out there for a little while. In fact, it even dropped to under 100. And you go to some countries where people don't live to be 40 or 50 years old. But I can tell you it's in reverse. The ages are in cycles, just like the four seasons. And we're in the age of least consciousness right now. But we're over the hump, and you can tell, because if you look at our medicine, if you look at our technology, and look at other things that are going on, we are quickly moving forward. And that would not happen if the consciousness, if the global consciousness was not on the expanse. And so that's a good thing. We've ebbed out at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's the lowest, and we're already past it. So maybe we could look at a clock and say we're at 6:30, thank God. Consciousness is now going to expand. And as the consciousness expands or grows, or we unfold into this higher consciousness, it reflects in the physical body, and we start to live longer. We're eating better. We're learning to exercise the hard way. I don't mean the exercise is hard. I mean we're learning it the hard way. Most people are waiting till they have the heart attack or they have the tumors or the cancers to start exercising. That's a must. We must exercise this temple of God. God lives in here. We have to take care of the temple. And I think that he would appreciate very much, or she or it would appreciate very much, if we would love the temple and take better care of it. I had people say, well, you know, I don't want to live here to be 600 or 400 or 300 years old. Well, you would if at 600 you looked like you were 90. One of the purposes of humanity, of being a human being, is that we're here to go through a process of self-realization. And it is through this process of self-realization that we come into something called God realization. Because we get a chance and an opportunity to get to know not only who we are, but what we are. You see, in my book, I say we're not who, we are what. Who is basically our character, our human character, and that can change. What we are is soul, and that never changes. That is the part of us that was created in the essence of the Creator. And so it never changes. Part of the issue is that we have lost the ability to have conscious contact with that. Our true identity is soul. And we, most of us, have not the slightest clue as to how we get in touch with our true identity as soul. Because that would be an instant raise in the level of consciousness. And as each individual works on that, it helps to raise the global consciousness. Because we are heading quickly into a new era. People can feel it. They know it. There was a lot of talk of it in 2012. So what is that, just 3 years ago? And the world didn't come to an end. And I had fun telling people, well, we'll be here tomorrow. Because we just go through cycles. A lot of the things or events that happen that we interpret as being negative, part of that is necessary. It's necessary karma for people to act out. There's no other way to do it. The karma doesn't get acted out in any other way but through human form. They're actually entities and souls on higher regions that can't wait to become human so that they can fulfill their desires that they didn't fulfill when they were here in human form before. So that makes humanity the highest in the rung of creation. And we have this tendency to think that, well, you know, they're up there, so they're higher. Well, they can't wait to get down here again and have this human form. A lot of good comes out of chaos, whether it's expected or not. So when people kept asking me about Baltimore, since I'm from Baltimore, I said, well, do you remember 9/11? They said, yeah. And I said, look how we came together as human beings after that event. That helped to bring out the best in people, the best in human behavior. People just leaps and bounds forgot all about their individuality, and they became more aware of our oneness. People were helping each other, and that would not have happened had it not been for the event that preceded it. I hope that makes sense to you. It's hard to hear that, but it's just the way it is. Especially if you have studied or understand how this thing called karma works. It helps me in understanding that if I'm watching a child in Africa that's dying, and they're only 2 years old, and they're suffering, have the protruded belly and the big eyes, it helps me understand where that suffering may come from. That maybe in that child's last life, there might have been some unpleasant things that soul performed or did, and it must pay off. It's karma. I personally got a whiff of that when I was about 16 because my grandmother was one of the nicest people that I ever knew on this planet. I never remember her even raising her voice at people. She was a school teacher for 40 years. And the worst thing that I could find on my grandmother was that she slapped the principal over some incident. Now, when you hear something like that, you think, well, if she just slapped the principal in this lifetime, then why did she have arthritis so bad? Why did she get a hole in one of her lungs and develop tuberculosis? It was hard for her to go up and down the steps. Why, at age 9, when I went out with her, she developed cataract and she became partially blind and almost completely blind in one eye. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, this can't be all about a slap in the face. Well, it helped me to understand that maybe in previous life or previous lifetimes, and that this woman was just paying off some of the karma that accumulates with us. It accumulates life after life after life after life. So when we see situations, especially with children, and we see a lot of suffering, trust me, as far as karma is concerned, there's a lot more behind the scenes than we are aware of. And there is a reason for everything that is happening. Quantum physics for a minute. To prove about the light and sound, I'll go through this really quick, and this is fun for me. I hope some of you like this. There was an event that happened back in the 1940s. Does anybody know what I might be talking about that happened in the 40s, other than two world wars? Now, I gave you a hint. Not the H-bomb. That came a little bit later. The atomic bomb. Yeah. Now, in order to have the atomic bomb, they needed to crack the atom. And when they split the atom, does anybody know what happened? It unleashed some power, okay? Now, how did that power look to scientists? How did it manifest itself? Light and sound, absolutely. That little thing, that little molecule, that little atom gave off a flash of light, and they detected a vibration, which would be sound. Now, at the time, that particle was the smallest particle known to humanity. But since then, we've discovered smaller particles. You know, they were able to take the atom, and they realized that there was a nucleus or a neutron, and then you had electrons and protons involved. Later on, they discovered muons and gravitons and leptons were next in line. And they've come down now almost 14 levels in their discovery of discovering something smaller and smaller and smaller. Now, in 2012, an interesting year because a lot of people felt that we wouldn't even be here now in 2012. They thought, hey, 2012 is it, right? You guys remember this?
Yes.
Sure. Okay, but while that was going on, in the world of quantum physics, something else happened. Does anybody know what happened or what they discovered in 2012?
Quark.
Did you say quarks?
The Higgs boson.
Say one more time.
The Higgs boson.
Tell me what that is.
God particle.
The God particle, absolutely. You guys got it right. So now we have the bridge between religion and science. Because science is verifying that there is this thing called a God particle. Now, what was the quality of the God particle? What was its quality? Does anybody remember? You should have written it down 1,000 times and put it in a diary and put it up on your refrigerator wall and on your bathroom wall and everywhere. And you should never forget what the quality of it was. It is supposed to be the particle that holds everything together. I know something else that does that. Can anybody tell me what that might be?
Love.
Isn't that something? That science discovered love, in a sense, by discovering the God particle? Now, 800 years before that, this gentleman, the beloved Jalaluddin Rumi, that I was just reading some of his verses in the very beginning, he said, love is in everything, and it is the everything also. And he didn't have any high-powered microscope or telescope or any of the technology that we have to be able to know that. So in a sense, we're rediscovering things that have been known for ages and ages and ages. None of this is really new. It's new to the restrictive mind that doesn't allow consciousness to unfold, to be able to absorb and take in higher knowledge, to take in these higher frequencies and things that nature provides for every human being living here. Okay, so the God particle was big. Right before that, the smallest particle known was the tachyon. Does anybody know the quality of the tachyon? The tachyon was the vibrating strings of light. The little strings, and they have pictures of them. They can show it to you what it looks like. So they're vibrating, okay, and there's this light coming off. So if it's vibration, it's got to be sound involved, okay? The God particle did the same thing, but it was the particle that held everything together, okay? Now, we go one more step further, and then I'm done with it. And you can see where I'm going with it. Every time they discover something smaller, it still gives off light and sound. The smallest known now is called the anomalon. Its quality is it seems to move in accordance with the consciousness of its observer. That, to me, is amazing. That means literally that my consciousness, my power of consciousness, is moving something. There is a movie coming out soon called Little Boy. And Little Boy, his father tells him all through his life that he can do anything in the world, that everything is possible. You just have to have faith, and there's nothing that you cannot do. And I watched a preview, and all of a sudden, this boy, after being put down and put down and put down, he does something with his hand, and the ground starts to shake, and these little pebbles are moving around on the ground, and there's a mountain behind him. And they find out later that that mountain actually shifts a little bit. So, anything is possible, especially when we learn how to tap in to our own inner light and sound, because that inner light and sound is the creator, is the source, is the power of God within us. We are that. Now, if everybody really experienced that, we'd all be able to move mountains. See, that's the thing. We all say God is in us. Yeah, God is in everyone, but some people are able to manifest this power a little more than others. A few people can manifest it a lot. I would say if you have the ability to walk on water, and multiply things. I use the word things because I don't believe that it was fish. I tend to think there was something else. Because to me, and this is personal, I don't think you have a person that in love with God that can eat animals. I've been vegetarian since I was probably 16 years old. So it's a contradiction. Folks, I know because I used to work in the food industry and I'd go to people's houses and draw up food menus for them. And they'd have 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old kids. And I had to show pictures that I didn't like showing to the parents. And the kids wouldn't come. They would not look at them. They wouldn't come over to the table. And these are 4 and 5 and 6-year-old children saying, Mommy, are you going to do that to Butch? Are we going to do that to Rover? You see, they have sense at 4 and 5 and 6 years old. They can see there's a contradiction. I can't have a pet and say that I love it, and then I turn around and put another pet or animal on the dinner table. It just doesn't make sense. Katie Lang said it doesn't make sense. There are a lot of people, and it's a growing number of people that say it just doesn't add up. Children watch our do and say. And if the do and say doesn't match, children have a problem with that, as we did when we were children. So in the new age, not only consider your exercise, but consider your diet and what you're eating. Got to get this in. Sugar is cancer. It causes it, and it increases the ability of these cancer cells to flourish. Cancer cells go crazy in us 6 to 10 times during our lifetime. And if you happen to be on a sugar binge at the time, the body doesn't recognize what kind of sugar. I don't care if it's brown sugar or liquid, or doesn't matter. Sugar is sugar. And to make that even more interesting, in 1900, the average American ate 1 pound of sugar a year. Anybody know what it is now? 140. The body can't break it down, the body can't digest it and assimilate it, so it has to do something. And that's what it does. Now, mind you, the cancer doesn't start in the physical body. We have astral cancer and we have causal cancer, which is your mind. Everything starts at the top and works its way down, and then in the physical plane, it needs some way to manifest itself, and it shows up. And usually by the time it shows up in the physical body, usually, not all the time, it's too late. What else is cancer? Anger. That's where it starts, guys. Some of us, we look real pretty and nice on the outside, especially when we go to places like church on Sundays. But inside, we hold a lot of resentment from our childhood or someone. Some of us are so sensitive, it only takes one bullying to experience when we were only 6 or 7 or 8 years old. It only takes one incident, and it can cripple some souls. And we hold that anger in, and it grows, and it grows, even if it's unconsciously. I had a friend. His mother would come to my meditation meetings all the time. She was in her 50s. And she was the nicest person that you ever want to know. And her son was nice. And all of a sudden, she just passed away. And I said, what was it from? And he said, she died of cancer. I said, I have to ask you, was there some point in your mom's life where she was angry a lot or upset? This stuff was really eating at her. He said, yeah. Mom was in her 20s and 30s. She had a hard time with men, and she never let go of it. She was angry a lot then. And then in the 50s, look what happens. So I had to throw that in about the sugar. Do I have it from time to time? Yeah, I do. Sparingly, I try, but I'm in the gym. And I'm doing a lot of cardio work. So you can work stuff through your system if you're active and exercise enough. Something to keep in mind, because this is all about higher consciousness. If we're going to become these transformed higher conscious beings, then there's just certain things we have to know. Thank God that someone can share this with us and let us know what is what. Okay? So the quantum physics has done for us a wonderful thing, because we discovered the God particle. We realize that consciousness manipulates and moves things, creates things. This is why we're told that our thoughts can have a heavy and serious impact on our lives. And this is why we're told, if we're going to think, try to think positive, because we want to create positive in our lives. Okay, but thought is very powerful. Okay, so we have to be careful with our thoughts around other people and, you know, even creation itself. Thought is extraordinarily powerful. Madame Blavatsky has a quote that I like a lot, and it speaks to some of what I'm sharing with you tonight. And I'd like to just share this quote with you. We live in an atmosphere of gloom and despair, but this is because our eyes are downcast and riveted to the earth with all its physical and grossly material manifestations. If instead of that, man proceeding on his life journey looked not heavenward, which is a figure of speech, but within himself, and centered his point of observation on the inner man, he would soon escape the coils of the great serpent of illusion. That says a lot. And it is my sense that man either sees through the physical eye or he sees through the spiritual eye. Now, what do I mean by that? Either our life force is a centrifugal force, which means that it goes, our attention, we're precious attention, that's what we are, goes down and out into the world, or very few souls have learned to put it in reverse, and so then it becomes a centripetal force. Now you have the ability to take your life force within yourself and ascend. And we don't have to wait till we die physically to ascend. There's too many people meditating to verify that for us. There's too many people in the world now having near death, afterlife, out of body experiences. I had so many of them when I was 16, I lost count. You know, Daniel Brinkley has four of them, and he writes a book about it, and he's sharing with the world on these experiences in Saved by the Light. Now, he got hit by lightning a couple of times to produce that. Betty Eady writes a book called Embraced by the Light. Now, I'm talking way back in the early days when these books were just starting to come out. By the way, Life After Life by Dr. Raymond Moody was either the first or second book that came out on this. And now today there's like 350. And they're just starting to come out like that now, of people having these kind of experiences. But Betty Eady says on page 83 in her book, she talks about, well, when I got there, there was this beautiful sound. She called them tones. And she could hear a couple of different pitches in these tones. And this phenomenon was going on during her experience. And Shirley MacLaine writes a book called Out on a Limb. The unique thing about her book is that she mentioned about the silver cord, and she could see it. Everybody has one. When we leave the body for good, it snaps, and you don't come back. But in meditation, you can see it, and you can come back and forth anytime you want to. Why am I sharing this with you, and what does this have to do with tonight? Well, I need everybody to be aware of this. The near-death experience that we have, or the out-of-body experience that we have, is not an astral experience. And we have them on what is called an involuntary basis. I've met Daniel Brinkley, I've talked to him, I've met a lot of people with these near-death experiences, and I said, oh, that was wonderful. Great that you had that. Can you do it again? Can't duplicate it. Those that have been meditating seriously for long periods of time and used a little bit of discipline and practice into the Psalms 46:10, where it says, be still and not think. It says, and know that I am God. That's powerful stuff. Be still and know that I am God. So you're telling me that all I have to do is sit still long enough and I'm going to start to experience God? Or that I am that, or I am that I am. Amazing stuff. So Shirley MacLaine experiences her silver cord. And by the way, that's in world scriptures worldwide. They talk about it. Many different names for it. It's in the Bible. It's in Ecclesiastes somewhere. It talks about the silver cord. But there is a difference between a person that meditates because they're having what is called a voluntary experience versus involuntary. I didn't need to be hit by lightning, have a car crash, have a baby, or some trauma in my life like that to have the experience. And there are a lot of people with us, walking amongst us and living with us that can have the experience at will. That's what I want you to know, okay? So, because some people are, well, I never had that, or I'd like to have that. Well, there's not a person in this room that can't have an experience of light and sound within. However that manifests to you, if you really want it, it can happen. And there's not a person in here that can't happen for. Okay? Anybody can have that. So that's two things about the near-death experience. One was the involuntary basis of it versus voluntary. And the other thing is that Dr. Melvin Morse wrote a book called Transformed by the Light. And he says something in there. He talked about, I think he talked to 1,000 or 2,000 people at least in order to write that book. And what he wrote down was the 9 common things that people experience during the near-death experience. And so the teachers of the Santmat tradition say, whatever the experiences are, they haven't even reached the threshold of the astral world yet. And a lot of times we know that because a lot of the experiences are still here. In other words, if I'm up over my operating table and I can't even get above the ceiling, but I'm looking down and I can see what's going on, I can't be in the astral world. I'm right here. Okay, if I'm traveling over town, if I'm going to the moon, that's physical. I'm in a spiritual body, but my experiences are all based on things of the physical world. And so I can't be in the astral world because the astral world is a whole different animal. Okay? So that's something good to know, because a lot of people have near-death, out-of-body experiences and say, oh, yeah, I went to the astral plane. If it was that easy, a lot more people would be doing it. There's work involved in it. And I just want to share that the part of the work is personal transformation work. And so that is not something necessarily that we want to run from. If we are interested in becoming better human beings and raising the consciousness of the planet, then we may want to consider more in the way of personal transformation or what some people call self-development work. Going to 12-step meetings, CODA for me, because I didn't drink and I didn't do drugs or anything. So I was thinking in the beginning, where am I going to find my place? You know, so I went to AA. So then they told me about CODA, and I started going to CODA. It actually improved my meditation, because now I was accepting the fact that I had to work on myself. I was accepting that there were issues that I had that I could work on. And by me working on my personal issues, it started to clear the slate for me to be able to have better meditation and ascension. It's something like this, guys. I look at meditation sometimes like I look at a pond or a lake. And the clearer the water is, the clearer your reflection in it. If there's a lot of dirt in that pond after a storm, you're not going to see your reflection in it. But after that dirt settles and goes to the bottom of the water, you look over and guess what? You can see yourself. It may not be so clear in the beginning, but the more clear the water, which is the mind, then the more clear we see ourselves in that. To develop this single or inner spiritual eye, we must learn to rivet our attention inward through a specific art of meditation. We all know, as did Madame Blavatsky, that this is the gateway, the Tao, the sacred path or doorway within. She had the ability to have voluntary access to this doorway into higher regions. In Matthew 7:7, we have, knock, and it shall be opened unto you. What is it? Well, it has to be a spiritual door or a spiritual gateway. Here, we are to knock hard with full concentrated attention. Now, later, St. Matthew says, straight is the gate and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. That is amazing to me. No doubt that Madame Blavatsky not only found this gate, but had inner voluntary access to it and experienced the astral and causal realms through her meditation. She experienced not only the inner light, but what she called the voice of silence as well. Okay? Sant Kirpal Singh shared in his book, The Mystery of Death, the spirit, when attuned to the sound current, begins to see the light of God without eyes, to hear the voice of God without ears, clings to the divine music without hands, and moves forward or Godward without feet. Beautiful. This light and sound vibration, we know, as I shared earlier, that it's not physical. It manifests itself again on every realm or plane of creation. You know, in the Christian scriptures, it talks about, in my Father's home are many mansions. many realms, many planes of creation. So it is something that anyone can attach themselves to through the power of our attention, and we can take this sound is like a current, and it's manifests itself to us, and we can follow it like a stream goes back to the ocean. We pick up this current, this sound and light current, and we can actually ride this sound and light current back to source. One of the problems with having easy access to this inner sound and light and these inner realms is that we get so caught up and absorbed in our external affairs and our outer life that we forget all about sympathy and compassion and contentment and love. Annie Besant shares from her study of the ancient wisdom a description of the astral world. And Kirpal Singh of the Santmat tradition, he used her description in his book, The Mystery of Death, because he felt that her description was so accurate and so on point. If we can start about right here, I'll just read. The astral world is the world of spirits or disembodied souls. Souls having cast off the physical and yet still enfolded in the subtle and causal coverings. The astral world is called Priti Lok, the place of the Pitris, or Manes, of the defied souls of the departed ancestors. Here the souls are imprisoned in the seven-shelled encasement of the astral world, drawing subtle material from each of the seven subplanes existing therein. It is there that the souls work out the causes which they set going on the earth plane by undergoing certain purificatory processes in the divine crucible so as to make them worthy of the land of the shining ones after the dross or the physical body is burned off. So here we have Annie Besant, and her famous study, The Ancient Wisdom, has given a graphic description of the various subplanes and what she called Kamlok, or a lower subplane in the astral world. Okay, here's the very first of the regions. We're going from bottom up in these seven subdivisions. It says here, each peopled by souls of persons of varying natures and temperaments. The scum of society, the vilest of the vile, the murderers and marauders, the ruffians, the profligates, and persons with bestial appetites and brutish appetites who, while living on earth, shape for themselves bestial astral bodies now appear after death in savage forms in their natural likeness and native hideousness. In the lowest strata of the infernal region, roaming about, roaring, raving, and raging fiercely, pret-like, wandering in search of the means of the gratification of their desires. In these gloomy and loathsome surroundings, they reap the harvest of their own sowing and learn the much-needed lesson which they failed to learn during their lifetime on earth, and they were whirled away on the tide of lust and desires. Nature's lessons are bitter and sharp, but merciful in the long run, designed as they are for each soul's ultimate good. To the next subplane go such souls as quit their bodies with some deep anxiety weighing heavily on them, or souls that had impeccable appetites or desires for self-enjoyment and gratification. Now we're up to the next two sub-regions, would be levels 3 and 4. For those who are educated and thoughtful people, chiefly occupied with worldly affairs during their lifetime on earth, their attention is directed more outwards than backwards because they belong to a progressive type. From the fifth subplane, now this fifth subplane is actually the pure and actual astral plane. So when a person goes to the astral world or plane where the thousand lights are, or there's an eye there with these thousands, everybody refers to it as a thousand lights, it would be the fifth subplane. Onwards, the environment changes considerably, becoming astral in true sense of the word, that is truly starry-studded with stars, and the surroundings are chiefly inspired. These three subplanes, 5, 6, and 7, are euphemistically termed heavens, the heavens of a lower type, sometimes spoken of as by the latter Jews as infernal heavens, being situated in the infernal world as distinguished from supernal heavens. the religious and philosophic busybodies find their way to the materialized heavens in the fifth region, which they desire and coveted while they were on earth, like happy hunting grounds, the Valhalla, the final resting place of the illustrious dead and the heroes slain in battle. And then I just want to get real quick to the souls of the more advanced type, like artists find a place in the sixth subplane, the seventh, or the highest subplane is entirely for the materialistically oriented, and intellectuals like politicians, administrators, and men of science who are pronouncedly materialistic on earth and wedded to the ways of the world in their acquisition of knowledge. So there's a lot more to that, but I just wanted to show people that exists. And there's a similar division of the realms above that, the causal realms as well. I'm going to open up for Q&A, questions and answers or comments or anything that you might have.
How does one know that they're in the astral?
I can only share with you that in the Sant Mat tradition, which is not a tradition of just for the Sikhs or the Hindus or India or even the East, that tradition encompasses saints and masters from all over the world at various times in history. And what they say is that there is a process. And part of that process is that we experience an inner star, an inner moon, and an inner sun. Now, right away, when I say star and moon, I think of the Islamic flag with the crescent moon and the star. There's a message, huge message there. That star, Star of David, Star of Bethlehem. You could go on and on and on. But once we progress to the point where we can see the starry heavens, blue sky and the clouds, but it's star is the key, and then there's an inner moon and an inner sun that people experience, and that would be indication of the astral world. There's more to it, but I'm trying to answer your question quickly. So they're they look like they're coming to you, and this happens over many, many meditations. Okay, so they come closer. It looks like you're actually moving toward them. They're not moving toward us. We move toward them, and at some point in your progress, you go through them.
I frequently experience light when, yes, I'm meditating, of different types and movements and things, and once in a while some sound. Yeah. But when I don't attach to the light, which I tend to do because, mm-hmm, I enjoy it, mm-hmm, I'll move into a space, where everything just, the house disappears, the ground disappears, my body disappears, everything is just gone. Yeah. And I'm wondering, I wonder if that's a form of sort of like light, but viewed from the side. So it's not actually focused on myself, or on my lower self,
We perceive things on this level in dimensions and space, which there really is no such thing, because ultimately everything is above time and space. But the mind can only perceive what it can perceive. So while we're on this physical plane and we've learned geometric figures and space continuums and time continuums, that's how we perceive this thing, when in actuality it's manifesting to you above time and space. Yeah, now I do know that a lot of times when we try to make something happen, I liked when you said you remove yourself, because it's when we get into the still point of nothing happening. Meditation is about doing nothing. It's not about doing something. It's about being still and silent. And in that stillness and in that silence, the creator, God power, universal power starts to take over.
There is a question for you from someone watching through the internet. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your wonderful presentation and enlightenment. What are your thoughts regarding the collective compassion consciousness through quantum physics research? making a push for a call to action, what would the future look like?
Okay, well, number one, we have to remember this. Quantum physics is still physics, and quantum physics is still a physical thing. But it does help, obviously, to raise consciousness, because we talked about the qualities of the God particle, we talked about the anomalon, and we talked about certain particles, and those were all beautiful descriptions of something at work. We talked about the God particle being the particle that holds everything together. So it's a matter of the collective consciousness catching up with individual consciousness. There are individuals here on Earth already doing the best that they can do, and they're doing some very valuable work by simply meditating. Meditating, although we said you don't want to do anything, it is a time period where something is being done. Okay, but meditation itself is really not physical. In fact, the third eye isn't physical. Those first five chakra centers are, but the sixth one is not physical. And it is not the pineal gland. So if you're studying something and learning that the pineal gland is the third eye, I'm sorry to tell you that it's not. The pineal gland was given to people to help them have a rough idea of the location of where the third eye would be. The pineal gland is an atrophied gland that has nothing to do with the third eye. Third eye is a spiritual aperture, and it's where we go through to enter going into higher spiritual regions. So quantum physics is aiding and helping us if we allow it to, if we let it, and if we can learn from it without getting the ego and the mind involved. Okay? But the global consciousness, we can't manipulate that. The only thing we can do is manipulate our own consciousness. So once I realized that, for some people, they would say, oh, how selfish he is, putting all of his attention on himself. But once I realized the only person that I could change, like Gandhi said, change begins with me, then that's where my work has been. Now, as I change me and more people start to do that, then we change and have an effect on the global consciousness. Something, though, I have learned, and probably some of you in here have learned as well, the more I worked on myself and the more I changed, I started to draw the similar people into my life flow. And I started to lose certain other people. People that I thought were friends were no longer attracted to what I had to offer. And so that was fine with me. And then I start drawing in new people in my life, people that think alike, people that want to go into higher consciousness, people that want to move forward and become better human beings. You start to draw them into your life flow. So that's my answer.
See, there is a conditioning we have with the body, conditioning with the mind, and conditioning with the heart in through our life. Those have an impact on what's happening with us. But those have an impact during the meditation. Those will have some impact on what we are experiencing in the meditation. So seeing that all this happening, then we see, we will be able to see the, like lake metaphor you said, water. When all this conditioning settles down, that's when we're actually able to see ourselves, who we are.
Yes. However, I think that meditation affects what I do out in the world. I don't think that what happens out here affects my meditation. Now, when I first started meditating, I didn't think like that. But I've been doing it long enough to see that effective change comes from the fact that I spend a certain amount of time meditating on a daily basis. Give us this day our daily bread. You're the bread and water or wine for the soul is the light and the sound. The bread is the light and the sound current, like a water, is the water and the wine of life. So the more my true identity or soul eats this daily bread, if I try to do it weekly, try doing without physical food for a week. See how you do. Okay? He said, give us this day our daily bread. And if I may share with you, this is important. If you can only do meditation for 5 minutes, please do. It's better than not doing it at all. But we tithe traditionally. I've looked at several religions, and they all tithe 10%. And we've so lost the energy or the information that I'm sharing with you tonight, we've termed this 10% of tithing and made it about money. And the 10% was supposed to be our time spent in meditation to the Creator. And if you took 10% of 24 hours, you come out to 2.4 hours a day. And I've read many books and materials that said we have to meditate 2.4 hours a day just to reach equilibrium from all the negative vibration and stuff that's going on against us. So think about that for a minute, because if we're only doing 1 hour, half an hour a day, 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening, we were built and designed to meditate for at least 2.4 hours a day. And that is the only way that we're going to get our daily bread and our water and wine of life. Because we're spiritual entities within bodies, and the soul needs to be fed too, just like the physical body.